Hey, DC, did you know that it's Arbor Week? And that means it's the perfect time to learn about and protect our trees. Local nonprofit Casey Trees is helping to protect our tree canopy by teaching kids the value of trees and working with them to plant new ones. The trees they're planting now ensure that future Washingtonians have a beautiful and healthy city. So support Casey Trees today by giving online at caseytrees.org/give. Your tax-deductible donation will go directly toward tree planting efforts in historically underserved communities, including schools in Wards 5, 7, and 8. Once again, that's caseytrees.org/give. Let's plant some trees, y'all.
Hey there. Priyanka Telve here, the executive producer of CityCast DC, and I'm just dropping in really quickly before we get to today's episode because there was huge news last night. I don't know if you heard, but over the past few months, we've been covering this massive arena story about how the Capitals and Wizards are going to leave DC, they're going to be going to Virginia to Potomac Yard, it's going to kill Chinatown. It's all been very stressful. And late last night, we heard that Alexandria had killed the deal, and Ted Leonsis, who is the owner of the Caps and Wizards, had met with Mayor Bowser and agreed to stay in DC. What is going on? We're going to have all of the juicy details in tomorrow's episode, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, celebrate. This is so exciting. Also exciting, today's episode about the old Georgetown board and all the chaos that ensues with it. So over to Mike.
Today on CityCast DC. So one of the things about DC is that the shape of our city is controlled by a bunch of weird boards and commissions that are not always staffed by people we actually elect. And one of the weirdest of these boards is the old Georgetown board. Topher Matthews, who runs the Georgetown Metropolitan, recently did a deep dive into just how things get built. And it's totally interesting, even if you don't live in Georgetown. Today is Thursday, March 28th. I'm Michael Schaefer, and here's what DC is talking about. Hey, Topher.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm good. So the old Georgetown board, it's one of these agencies that, like the Commission on Fine Arts that it's part of, actually exerts a weird power over the lives of a lot of people here and the shape of our neighborhoods. Their job is to preserve the quote-unquote character of the Georgetown neighborhood. And you wrote a piece in the Georgetown Metropolitan, which you founded, about the tricky situations this leads to. You wrote basically that the board maybe has too much power, not enough responsibility. And before we get into like what that means, can you give some examples of issues the board has ruled on?
Oh, sure. I mean, basically every building that has been built, changed, torn down since 1951 in Georgetown specifically has gone through the old Georgetown board. So they have pretty much touched everything.
So just to be like, if I live in Georgetown, I want to put a roof deck on my house. Do I need their permission?
Yes.
I want to paint my front door?
No, paint is actually an exception because basically if you need a building permit, you have to go through them. You don't need a building permit for paint. So you don't have to go through them for that specifically. But if you want to change what your door is made out of, if you want to make it glass instead of wood, then yeah, you have to go through them.
Wait, so then when that guy put up those statues of the Transformers in front of his Georgetown house and enraged some neighbors, why was that an issue for this quasi-government agency?
So that one gets a little more complicated because he is seeking approval to keep those up through something called the Public Space Committee, which is a DC agency that decides whether or not someone can put something in the public space. And in this case, those are actually on the sidewalk. And the old Georgetown board will weigh in on that ahead of the time. So yes, that would be a case where they would weigh in. I think the question of what that role of weighing in is kind of getting at what I was talking about in the article, that it is fundamentally an advisory board. It doesn't issue permits. It doesn't deny permits itself. It doesn't enforce anything that it has said. That's all up to the DC government, who it advises.
What did they wind up ruling about the Transformers on the man's sidewalk?
So the Public Space Committee ruled that they are not allowed on the public sidewalks. And so Dr. Newton Howard, the owner of the Transformers, is appealing to the courts and trying to get the decision of the Public Space Committee overruled.
The big picture is going back to the middle of the 20th century, decades and decades.
Sure.
If you got a place in Georgetown compared to certain other parts of town, you have a few more hoops to jump through if you want to do something to that because of the sort of laws around the historic character of that neighborhood.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what how the board works. So if you want to make a change to your house, physical change that's visible from a street, you go to the city to get a permit, just like anyone in the city would do. But before the city can issue the permit, it sends it off to the Commission of Fine Arts, who has its own sub-body called the Old Georgetown Board, that will look at your plans, meet once a month, but only 10 months a year, and decide whether or not they like what you've proposed. And if they do, then they pass it along and then the city will issue a permit. If they don't, then the city won't issue a permit. And that's how it literally works. And so that's how it's different in Georgetown from other places in the city.
And just to be clear, this is a federal board. This is not a board appointed by the people we vote for as DC residents. It's the president.
Right. And so that's how it differs from, say, Capitol Hill, DuPont, other historic districts in DC. In other historic districts in DC, it's a similar process, but it goes to something called the Historic Preservation Review Board, which is a DC agency full of mayoral appointees and also has just public representatives. It's more of a small d democratic body.
Meaning if you don't like the stuff they do, we can vote out the people who appoint them, but that's a power we don't have for the Georgetown.
Zero power to do that. So the Old Georgetown Board is appointed by something called the U.S. Commission of Fine Arts, which approves what our money looks like or our monuments look like. But then they were given the responsibility in the middle in 1951 to say, okay, well, what does Georgetown look like? And so the Commission of Fine Arts is, they're all president appointees, and then they appoint the Old Georgetown Board, which is, again, three architects who don't necessarily live here. They certainly don't get voted in or anything like that. So there's zero democratic voice on that body.
Hey, DC art lovers, award-winning actress and playwright Anna Deavere Smith is giving a four-part lecture series at the National Gallery of Art. It is called Chasing That Which Is Not Me / Chasing That Which Is Me. Smith is known for her roles in The West Wing, Inventing Anna, and Nurse Jackie, so you definitely want to come take a listen. They'll be every Sunday from April 28th to May 19th at 2 p.m. And the best part is they are totally free! Register to secure your spot at nga.gov/melon24. All right, so your article, it centers around this proposed office-to-residential conversion at the bottom of Thomas Jefferson Street. Office-to-residential conversions are all the rage in D.C. right now, as people don't come into offices anymore, but people do want apartments and condos. And I happen to have worked in one of these buildings, and they are pretty dreary, like 70s, 80s kind of office buildings. Can you explain what the story is? Like, what does somebody want to do? And then what happened with this board?
So the developer, you know, owns a building and is proposing to, exactly what you say, convert it from an office building into a residential building. And in this case, they've proposed a project that is of a certain size. And as of that time I wrote that, the most previous Old Georgetown Board meeting, they said they didn't want it to be that size. And the developer said, well, that may make the whole project not feasible for us anymore. And the Old Georgetown Board said, that's not our concern. That's not our job. And so that's what inspired the article, was that they don't bring any sort of expertise or policy to the question of whether a project should go forward for public policy reasons. Their job is to say whether it will look nice, which is great. But I've just trying to throw out as a possible discussion, maybe other things matter as well.
Right. And they don't work for us. They don't necessarily even live here. So there's not necessarily any built-in concern with, like, is this neighborhood going to be vibrant or economically viable or fun or anything like that. But here's the thing, you know, even if we just stick to, like, aesthetics, those buildings, it's not like they were buildings that were once occupied by a canal keeper or something. You know, these are dreary 80s office buildings. These developers wanted to turn them into apartments and put a penthouse or two on the top so that they can be make more money or make enough money from the project. How did the original buildings get by the old Georgetown board that's supposed to be so pure and true about aesthetics? And two, what's their problem now? It's not like it's that good looking.
Well, I think you've really put your finger on it, that these buildings were approved by the old Georgetown board at the time. And I think that's a big drawback to a rigorous historic preservation regime, is that you essentially often can completely cut off any sort of innovations in architecture going forward. You often find that new buildings don't want to stand out, or if the developer designs a building that will stand out, the old Georgetown board or other reviewing bodies make them trim it back to where it just kind of blends in. And I think that's how you ended up with all these really dreary brick boxes down near the waterfront in the 80s, is that they didn't want to do something adventurous because they were told not to. And now we have these buildings that nobody even likes, but yet they're getting protected, because it's not just about the building. It's about the entire neighborhood, the views from blocks away. Is it blocking somebody's view of the river from a quarter of a mile away? Maybe. That's often the justification for why buildings that don't have any architectural merit are nonetheless being, you know, quote unquote, protected in this way.
Can we drop back for a second? I'm going to probably ask you to give me like a quickie history of Georgetown. People think of it as this sort of ancient colonial neighborhood in Washington, but this board actually only dates from the middle of the 20th century, from 1951. And you've written about how actually a lot of the supposed federal architecture in Georgetown also dates from around that time, or not that long before it. What happened there? What's the history of the board, and how does it dovetail with the history of the neighborhood?
Sure. Well, the neighborhood itself was founded as a town in the colony of Maryland in 1751, founded by land that was taken from two guys named George, which some people think is the reason is the George in Georgetown, or George II. It's one of the others. And it was a port town, and normally tobacco, initially, eventually coal, and it developed for about 50 years, and then it won the lottery when the federal government decided to move in next door. And then it became the sort of social hotbed of the young capital. And throughout the 19th century, it kept on developing as a prosperous neighborhood. And what that results in is that all the buildings that happen to have been built between 1750 and, you know, 1810 or whatever, they got knocked down and they got replaced by buildings built in the 1820s and 1830s and et cetera. And so the vast majority of the buildings that are in Georgetown today are not federal. They're certainly not colonial. They're mostly Victorian, 1850s and forward, which is great and all. It's just not what I think a lot of people picture in their mind as sort of federal Georgetown. But then what happened was that you get to the 20th century and the neighborhood sort of got long in the tooth. The economic development moved over to places like Kalorama and other parts of the city, and it became a slum, frankly. And people stopped even building new Victorian buildings or new 20th century buildings. And as a result, there was almost this like benign neglect for about 30 years when they just sat there. And then in the 30s, famously, Roosevelt's New Dealers came in.
So all these New Yorkers come down, and it's like kind of one of the early stories of gentrification in D.C.
It's 100% that. If you go back and look at it, it has all the same hallmarks that you see in Shaw or other neighborhoods, Ivy City, wherever in D.C. It's the exact same story. It just happened 80 years prior. You had these large African-American neighborhoods within Georgetown, particularly Herring Hill, which is on East Georgetown, vibrant, successful, healthy neighborhoods that then just got leveled and by the forces that we now call gentrification. But back then, things like the Alley Dwelling Act and then later the Old Georgetown Board helped accelerate the economic pressures that pushed out that population. And so the 30s happened, people really started getting into Colonial Williamsburg and other sort of colonial and federal images of American history and sort of projected that onto Georgetown in a lot of ways. And that then led to a campaign in 1950 where the Congress passed the Old Georgetown Act, which created what we're talking about here.
These folks gentrify a neighborhood. They're like, wow, we live in a really historic neighborhood at a time when there's sort of a fetish around American history, even though most of the actual history had been knocked down. And they then get Congress that runs DC to write a law protecting history. And years later, Georgetown residents like yourself are still dealing with the side effects of that law, good and bad.
Good and bad. Yeah, I think it's important to say there's both good and bad because we don't really know what it would look like had it not happened. DC, of course, also has historic districts, of which one is Georgetown. And I think you can make a case that it would be better served or as well served if the Historic Preservation Review Board handled Georgetown just like it handles DuPont or Capitol Hill or wherever else. But those tools didn't exist in the mid 20th century. And so Old Georgetown Board was the first. And I think it should be credited with preserving a lot of stuff. I just think that it also came with a set of drawbacks that I'm mentioning here.
And so tell me some of the ways you think this board bailed the neighborhood.
Well, I mean, I think the one is we've just been talking about, I think it's not very good at encouraging inventive and interesting new architecture. I think a great example of this is with the Apple Store, if you remember that saga. I think it was 2007, something like that. Apple wanted to come to the neighborhood. There was a lot of a 1980s building that they could knock down. Nobody cared about that building. And so they had this empty lot that they could essentially build whatever they wanted. And the first proposal that they put out was this ice cube of a building. It was just like a glass box that fit with the aesthetics of what Apple Store was doing at the time. And the Old Georgetown Board rejected it. And then they went through a bunch of iterations. And then we ended up with a building that, if you stand in front of it, you would think was built in the 1870s and is just a normal white brick building. And there's no architectural merit to it. So I think that's certainly something that has occurred, that it has produced either unremarkable buildings like that or ugly buildings like the ones we were talking about earlier down on the waterfront. That's certainly one thing. And I think on a question of public policy, I think it's a fair question to ask whether the impact of bodies like the Old Georgetown Board have on housing policy is one thing. If buildings are being reduced in size, a lot of times that means that housing is not getting built. And a lot of times it has knock-on effects that affordable housing is specifically not being built. So that's, I think, something worth asking about. There have been cases with solar panels switching to having sustainable energy that historic boards, both the OGB and HBRB, have run into this, where they're really discouraging of having solar panels that you could actually see. So people end up having to build smaller ones as a result, so you can't see them. And so that's certainly not in line with dealing with some challenges that we have as a country and a city.
But like, even the name of the board, the Old Georgetown Board, it sounds so stuffy. What is the effect on the sort of culture reputation of Georgetown?
I mean, I think a lot of times residents get dinged. I think it's happened a lot with the Apple Store, is that people were saying, oh, all the Georgetowners are trying to stop the Apple Store. And we had nothing to do with it. It was these architects that don't even live here. And, you know, it's not always the best face forward in terms of a welcoming approach to the world. So yeah, it does have that a little bit of a ring. I don't know, maybe just renaming it the new Georgetown Board.
Cool Georgetown Board.
Cool Georgetown Board. Yeah, I don't know. That one, I'm probably skeptical that'll make a difference. But it's certainly, when people want to tell a story, particularly a negative one of the neighborhood, it's a very convenient foil for them.
But look, here's the thing. On CityCast, we wouldn't probably be talking about this if it was just a Georgetown story, but I think this is actually a story that's relevant to people who live all over DC, because this is a city where it's hard to build a lot of stuff. You know, there's some places in the world with no zoning and you can, you know, you drive, like in Houston, you drive down the street and there'll be like a fancy restaurant next to a Jiffy Lube, next to a strip club, next to a school, and no one has anything to say about it. DC is, in some really good ways and some really rotten ways, it's much, much harder. It makes it more expensive, and particularly at a time when they're building a lot of stuff, that there's the incentive for the architects is to not do anything too risky because you might get one of these agencies crosswise. In your piece, you didn't say like, hey, we got to get rid of all this crazy bureaucracy and zoning. You don't even think the old Georgetown Board should be abolished. What's the reform you'd suggest?
The one thing to keep in mind is that the old Georgetown Board doesn't have the final say on this, that the way it is currently structured, you can appeal the old Georgetown Board to something called the mayor's agent, which is literally an agent of the mayor. And it's almost a court case that you can appeal to and have essentially a trial, and they can decide whether or not the ruling of the Commission of Fine Arts should stay. I think maybe making that a little bit easier might be one thing to consider. I think another approach that Eleanor Holmes Norton certainly has put forward in a bill several times is just that, to get rid of the old Georgetown Board and have the Historic Preservation Review Board handle it. I'm not saying that's something I necessarily personally would like, but I think it's something that people should consider. HPRB does a good job. It's got a good staff, and it's representative of the city itself in that the mayor is the one who's actually making the appointments.
I mean, if your view, and a lot of people's view, is we ought to have some sort of historic preservation process so you can't just knock down stuff willy-nilly in an old neighborhood. What is the argument for having it in the status quo, which is a thing that is appointed by the president of the United States who doesn't, you know, answer just to DC voters, versus the city's Historic Preservation Review Board, where, you know, if you don't like what they're doing, you can fire their boss, the elected officials here.
Right. Well, I think the case for the old Georgetown Board is that a lot of people agree with it. I think that's the,
Democracy.
Right. I think a lot of people, particularly in the neighborhood, particularly people who are active in the neighborhood, really like it because it is so difficult to get things built. So there's a merit to that if that's your goal. And I'm merely asking whether that should be the goal. And I think it's a conversation that should be had across the city and not just amongst people who are particularly active or happen to agree with the result of the old Georgetown Board's position.
Topher, thank you for being here. And I'm really glad we got through this entire conversation without the word NIMBY being stated.
Nothing about NIMBYism. It's more of a question of priorities and whether other priorities are also important. Because I think the old Georgetown Board does its jobs fantastically. It's got, a great staff that really work hard and do a great job at preserving history. The question is whether there are other objectives that we also should be pursuing. It's been great. Real pleasure. Thank you.
And that's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, and if your neighborhood board says it's okay, why not tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye. And just to be clear, we're talking about models of the transformers from the series, not like electric transformers or other power plant tools.
I have joked, if they were actual cars, they actually probably would be allowed.